Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Don't we love our little human condition segment? Tonight we're kicking off a new series of conversations with Lynn Worsley, our human condition guru, clinical psychologist, on emotions. So we all feel them, often acutely, sometimes a roller coaster. But what are they and where do they come from? More importantly, what can we do to manage them better? Is that possible, Lynn Worsley? Welcome.
Thanks.
Great to see you. So take us through what we'll be looking at over the next 4 weeks. We'll be looking at emotions, Lynn.
Okay, Lee. I hope to go through the theories of emotions and why they're there. So also what happens to those people who don't appear to have a lot of emotions, and also what happens to people who are a little bit over-emotional.
Okay.
So the first week I'd like to look at the brain patterns of emotions and how they function.
It's tonight.
Yep. And the second week we'll look at the differences with positive and negative emotions and the balance that helps us to function, because there's actually a formula. The third week we want to look at some particular emotions like fear, anger, hatred, and the effect on the brain and the body in response to those. And the fourth week we'll consider the power of the mind to control emotions and vice versa.
So they are able to be controlled.
Yes.
So take us through these brain patterns of emotions and how they function for us.
Okay. Now, emotions serve as a response to situations that help us to have a body or a brain reaction. And there's a theory of emotions put forward by Barbara Fredrickson at the University of Michigan, and she states that positive emotions broaden and build a person's experience. She notes that the positive emotions such as joy, interest, contentment, and love have a really interesting effect on the brain. And the key to the theory is that these positive emotions broaden the individual's momentary thought-action response repertoire.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a fancy
yes,
term.
Yes, it is.
For saying what?
Which basically means that joy sparks the urge to play, interest sparks the urge to explore, contentment sparks the urge to savour and integrate, and love sparks a recurring cycle of each of those urges within a safe and a close relationship.
Isn't that interesting, the power of love?
Yes.
Alone. Yes.
Now, the broadening of the mind is contrasted by the narrowing mindset, which is triggered by many negative emotions. So negative emotions such as fear, anger, sadness, anxiety, they trigger a response in the brain to shut everything down or to attack and flee.
Okay.
So these responses are designed to protect us from danger, so we don't broaden and build when it's not safe.
So they are appropriately there.
Yes.
And at times useful.
Yes. Okay. Now, given we talked about over the last 4 weeks about strategies we learned through our early relationships that set up patterns of how we respond to situations, the emotions that are triggered are part of those strategies.
Yes.
So we see someone's expression as unsafe because of our past, so we have an emotional response that makes us shut down. Or we see someone as safe and we respond to them in a way that broadens and builds our experiences according to what we've had in our past.
Yep.
Now, they can stay with us for years unless we try and seek to understand them. So emotions are incredibly valuable to give us information as to what our pattern or our response is and why. And there are often times when we're really confused by our emotions and our reactions. And it's really important to stop and consider them and work out whether the emotions are trying to tell us something that we need to be safe, or whether they're a past experience that we need to get over.
Yeah. So how are we going to assess our emotional experiences? Because I think it's fine for a professional to say that if we're broadening and building and not just shutting down as a response, perhaps.
Okay, let's just consider the emotions and the amount of energy they produce. So do emotions energize you to do something constructive or destructive? So, or do they shut you down to become withdrawn, depressed, or calm and mellow? So if you can imagine a square divided into four quadrants, the top half, the top two quadrants, they're the high energy quadrants. And at the bottom half are the low energy ones.
Right.
Okay. In the top two, in the two high energy quadrants, the one on the left is a set of negative emotions. So these negative emotions are anger, frustration, impatience, irritability, anxiety, and just feeling incensed. These emotions are aggressive and they serve to fight or flee. They're high energy and they're highly active, and they can cause some damage if you don't think through things. But if you also take on things without enough information and you react to them, you'll actually end up doing something bad. But they also spur you to act and tell you if there is some danger coming.
Yeah.
So the action in this situation is generally one that leads to increases feelings of danger. So basically, if you act according to those anger and frustration emotions, you'll make it the situation worse.
Yes, yeah.
The other high-energy quadrant on the right is a set of positive emotions. So they're optimistic, confident, receptive, excited, enthusiastic, and proud. Now, these emotions are also active, and they seem to be put people into a bit more of an aggressive, but not such a negative aggressive response. They can be responding to threat, but more like a optimistic or optimizing, taking a chance and doing something positive with it.
Yes, the whole positive psychology.
Yeah, so they get a bit excited about a new encounter. They're excited and they still have the same level of energy. And generally acting on those emotions pushes us into a much better direction and towards a much more positive future.
Okay. So what about the low energy emotions? They're the two remaining quadrants then.
Yeah. Now,
so you've been following this.
Yes. Yes. So the low energy emotions, these two quadrants, they're right. One on the right is the... No, with the one on the left, sorry, Lynn, get right. Then the one on the left is the negative emotions such as exhaustion, sadness, depression, hopelessness and helplessness. And they're disabling and they serve to shut the body and brain down. Mm. So this is almost like anger turned inwards. It becomes quite depressive. So the person can't think. They don't even contemplate anything. They don't want to change the circumstances and they just have that sort of helplessness. And the reason that is there is because they basically are shut down so they won't put themselves into a place of danger.
That's interesting, yeah.
Now, the low energy on quadrant on the right is the positive emotion, where there's carefree, calm, peaceful, mellow and passive and contemplative emotions. And the brain responds to these by opening up the experience of joy and delight in the moment. And we talk about that in our mindfulness stuff.
Yeah.
And the response is also to clear the mind and get ready for new information. So you can see there's a difference in the response of the body and the brain to negative and positive emotions, and also for high and low energy emotions. So the key for us is to be able to discover what the negative emotions mean and why they're there, and to work towards a more proactive and positive set of reactions. So to shift it from negative to positive, not necessarily active or passive, but maybe just negative to positive. So we actually have a more proactive response to our emotions.
If you're saying we can help ourselves in this, and ultimately, yet again, in the hands of a professional, this is best advised, but are there ways in which we can help ourselves, just to be practical about it?
I'll give you an example. A colleague of mine was doing a talk recently about building resilience skills by detecting icebergs. Now, icebergs is a term that's used to refer to seeing and feeling an emotion, which is at the top of the iceberg, in response to something which indicates there's something bigger underneath the surface.
Yes.
And it needs to be examined. So the tip of the iceberg is often an indication that there's danger ahead. So we need to be aware of our icebergs. Now, the participants in the group had practiced the skills themselves and they were talking about how to teach them. Now, the colleague mentioned the importance of using a personal example. Mind you, this is always, you know, scary, but
yes.
He used a personal example and he gave a quick personal example of his own. And he mentioned his own anger and then all of a sudden he was surprised and puzzled that he'd uncovered the deeper meaning and the value that was being triggered in the situation. And one of the participants looked at him and said, "Hey, you still feel it. I can still hear the anger in your voice."
Amazing. And this is a professional.
Yes.
Wow.
And so they were right. And he told them, "Yeah, that's right." And the point wasn't to rid yourself of emotions. And he said, "Look, I didn't want to rid myself of the emotion. The emotion was still strong. But you need to understand where it comes from and to be able to regulate your emotions."
Mm.
So he could probably still feel the anger, but it's just a feeling, not a driving force that he can't control. Now, from a mindfulness perspective, he could observe the emotion. He could even experience it without judging it or even being controlled by it.
Yep.
So oftentimes what we do in psychology is try and shift people to a zone where you can observe that emotion. And when you can observe that emotion, you can understand it. You can seek to understand whether it's something from the past that you don't need to deal with and it's not really relevant now, or it's something that actually is saying, you know what, what's happening right now is actually quite a dangerous situation and I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
Now, oftentimes in positive psychology, it can be misconstrued as a movement to eliminate negative emotions like anger and fear and anxiety or embarrassment and shame. But that would be ridiculous and counterproductive. Negative emotions are informative and they give us information about our lives and our environment now. Mm. So it's absolutely entangled in our whole awareness and our empowerments for our intelligence.
Yes.
So attempting not to feel emotions is like setting the goal to be less intelligent. So why would anyone do that?
Not me. I've got enough problems as it is.
And really, in my own practice, one of the things that I think happens to me a lot is that to help people to get in touch with why they feel something in response to their situation now is often saying, well, when did you feel like this before? What does it remind you of, a time when you felt like this?
Yeah.
And sometimes they can say, well, it felt a little bit like this when I was, you know, 7 and I was at school and I was being left out, or... Oh, when I was at home and everyone else had left home and I was by myself.
Let me ask you then my earlier question in another way. It's not only in the hands of a professional that you can identify those emotions and learn to control them, which we'll deal with in week 4. I suppose give us a bit of a preview of how we're going to be able to help ourselves in this.
Okay. I think it's really important to actually look at emotions in a way that enables us to just almost like step back from them and observe them. And, you know, you can do this without a professional. You can do this by journaling. And if you write down your emotions and just say to yourself, okay, this is why I was feeling this way. And to do what we call a map. I like to do an emotional map.
Yep.
So what emotions were attached to that particular episode that you went through? And what happened just before you got that feeling, and when does that remind you of something else? So to actually just do little bubbles and link them up and see how they all are connected, and oftentimes you can see a train of thinking that occurs with that.
And what's the next step going to be from identifying those to actually helping myself to deal with those emotions or maybe better control them?
Well, the next step would be to actually start thinking about what you're thinking while you have that emotion.
Yeah.
What is the words you're telling yourself? What are the key things that you're saying about yourself? What are the messages underneath those that you keep reminding yourself of?
Yeah.
And sometimes you can find that you're actually telling yourself thought patterns that are really defective. Thoughts that really aren't true anymore. They might have been true at a time when you were 3 or 4, but not now.
Yes. Okay, so give us a bit of a preview of where we're heading next week, the differences with positive and negative emotions and how that kind of balance helps us function.
Yes. Now, there was a wonderful theory that was put forward by Barbara Fredrickson and some of her colleagues in Michigan. And they looked at what is the ratio of positive versus negative emotions that actually help people to sustain in life.
Okay.
And there is a ratio, and they did a big study on it, and it's really interesting. It looks at how you can put together, I'm not going to give too much away.
No.
But it looks at how you can actually put a number of those particular emotions in place to actually help you to cope with something difficult.
Look forward to it very much. Lynn Worsley, as always, thank you so much for your wisdom. See you next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.